Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to first earnings conference call of Nexus Select Trust for Q1 FY24. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Prateek Gantara, Head Investor Relations and Strategy from Nexus Select Trust. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Aman. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining this first quarter financial year 2024 earnings call of Nexus Select Trust. Joining me today are Dalip Sehgal, Executive Director and CEO, our CFO, Mr. Rajesh Deo, our COO, Mr. Jayan Nayak, and our Chief Leasing Officer, Mr. Nirzar Jain. Before we start, a couple of important disclaimers. The management may make certain statements that may constitute forward-looking statements. Please be advised that our actual results may differ materially from those statements. Nexus Select Trust does not guarantee these statements or results and is not obliged to update them at any time. Specifically, any financial guidance and pro forma information that we will provide on this call are management estimates based on certain assumptions and have not been subjected to any audit, review, or examination procedures. You are cautioned not to place undue reliance on such information, and there can be no assurance that we will be able to achieve the same. With this, we will start off with brief remarks on our business and financial performance, and then open the floor to questions. Over to you, Dalip.
Thank you, Prateek. Good evening, everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome all of you to the first earnings call of the Nexus Select Trust, India's first retail REIT, for Q1 FY24 results. As you all perhaps know, Nexus Select Trust is India's number one mall platform with completed area of almost 10 million square feet and has a pan-India presence with 17 malls across 14 cities in both metros and mini-metros like Delhi, Mumbai, Bangalore, Hyderabad, Chennai, Ahmedabad, Chandigarh, and Pune. In each of the markets that we operate in, we are either the number one or a very strong number two player. Let me now look at our performance in the quarter and give you specific operational updates. Number one, I'm happy to inform you that we closed the first quarter with retail tenant sales of INR 29.3 billion and clocked 18% year-on-year tenant sales growth on a like-to-like basis. I think that's important. It's for the same set of malls. Our overall performance is ahead of our projections. At a consolidated level, our net operating income stood at INR 3.9 billion, up 18% year-on-year, and NOI margin stands at 74%, up 360 bips. Some of our top performing categories in this quarter were jewelry, beauty, personal care, footwear, and athleisure. Number two, in our key markets, our tenant sales growth has been significantly ahead of the market. In cities like Mumbai and Bangalore, we are around 1,000 bips higher than the market. In other cities like Pune and Chennai, we are 400 bips and 200 bips higher, respectively. Let me now talk a bit about some of the reasons for our strong performance. The number one is our strong retailer relationships. Over the last 7 years, we have built very deep relationships with close to 1,000 brands through our key account management program. Our malls are typically the first port of call for several national and international brands which are looking at India to expand their footprint. For example, brands like H&M, Zara, Massimo Dutti, Tim Hortons, Burger King, Sephora, to name a few. All of them opened their first in-country stores at our mall. Recently, Apple also launched one of India's only two flagship stores at Select City Walk, Delhi. With the recent trend of growth in omnichannel, D2C brands like Nykaa and Lenskart have opened their first physical stores with us and are now present in 80% of our malls. We opened 110 new stores in our malls during the quarter, and some of the marquee brands that have opened the stores are H&M, H&M Home, Gant, Armani Exchange, Hugo Boss, Time Zone, just to name a few. So that's the first one, which is strong retailer relationships. Number two is our strategy of leasing and repurposing. First, with strong demand from tenants for our properties, our occupancy has now gone up to 97%, which is 300 bps higher than last year. Today, most of our malls have a healthy wait list of brands looking for space. We are now ensuring timely new store openings, and our trading occupancy grew by 500 basis points year on year and now stands at 94%. We have leased 0.4 million square feet during the quarter across 186 deals, out of which 0.3 million square feet was on account of re-leasing. Our re-leasing spread stood at 21%, in line with what we had projected. We have a stable lease expiry profile with average annual expiry of about 0.7 million square feet every year over the next 4 years. Secondly, we have adapted to the changing consumer shopping behavior and actively repurposed areas within our portfolio, taking back area from hypermarkets and department stores and replacing them with growing categories like beauty, personal care, electronics, footwear, fitness, F&B, and entertainment. For example, we recently made space for Apple at Select City Walk by relocating some brands to a higher floor. Similarly, at Nexus Vijaya Chennai, we have repurposed the area occupied by a major department store and hypermarket to introduce brands like Decathlon and Shoppers Stop. This has contributed to better tenant sales and resulted in higher re-leasing spreads. The third reason is our real-time tenant sales data. As you are perhaps aware, we get sales data from over 90% of our retail partners on a daily basis via what we call automated daily sales report, i.e. ADSR. Using this data, we regularly evaluate the performance of every single store, which enables us to make real-time changes in our decision-making across marketing and leasing to enable us to drive tenant sales growth and footfalls. For example, seeing the strong athleisure demand, we curated specific campaigns called Sneaker Fest and Denim Fest to capitalize on this trend, and both these did extremely well. The fourth one is really appropriate marketing and activation. Our scale allows us to invest in large marketing campaigns like the signing of Bollywood superstar Amitabh Bachchan as a Pan-India Happiness Ambassador. The uniqueness of our marketing innovation helps us to draw more footfalls, and happy to tell you that we have seen a 10% increase in footfalls in this quarter. Families are spending more time, not only for shopping, but also dining at our restaurants, watching movies, and children are having a lot of fun at the family entertainment centers. Coming to part two of my speech, this is about the business model. As we have said earlier, our business model is unique and based on acquisitions. We acquire assets that have been underinvested and or undermanaged. With our capability to invest in upgrading the asset, bringing in better and newer premium brands, investing in appropriate advertising, standardization of costs, we are able to significantly enhance the value of the acquired assets. One such example is our first acquisition in the year 2016, which was Mall of Amritsar. We increased leased occupancy from 65% at the time of acquisition to 98% now. We brought in brands like H&M, Starbucks, etc., and improved the business performance by a factor of 2x. Another good example of this is our acquisition of 8 malls in South India in March 21 in the midst of COVID, which helped us to expand our footprint. We invested time in identifying the gaps in the brand mix based on consumer research and insight, thus making it more relevant and attractive proposition for that specific catchment. We focused on leasing efforts, were backed with a series of marketing activities. We also successfully executed one of perhaps the largest rebranding campaigns in Indian retail by bringing all the malls onto the Nexus platform. The occupancy of these 8 malls that were acquired in March 21 went up from 88% at the time of acquisition to 95% currently, and their NOI is on track to grow by 18% in financial year 24. Another example is that of our mall in Mangalore, which had a leased occupancy of only 72% when we acquired. Today it's at 85%. We did all this by improving the brand mix and leveraging our deep tenant relationships. Finally, part three, which is really talking about the strong balance sheet that we have. We have a robust balance sheet with active capital management capabilities and are armed with a war chest of close to $1 billion for acquisitions on the back of a low LTV of 15%, which is what we had projected. Our team continues to be in discussion with few leading developers in the country to evaluate possible acquisitions. We will announce these at an appropriate time. We have also recently raised debt of INR 22.5 billion at an average cost of 8.2% versus 8.5% assumed in the projections, resulting in an annualized interest cost saving of close to INR 110 million. Our in-place debt cost is 8.3% with a dual AAA/stable credit rating. A quick word on our hospitality and office business, which accounts for only 9% of our NOI. Both these businesses have performed in line with our projections. As you are aware, we had a strong response to our IPO from both domestic and international investors and was oversubscribed 6.6 times. In the IPO, we saw strong performance from 24,000 investors. We continue to work along with other industry participants to improve awareness of REIT among retail investors. As updated above, we are on track to achieve our projections as mentioned in our offer document. Before I end, let me take you to three important updates. First, while the key business indicators included in the presentation are for the period 1st April 23 to 30th June 23, it's important to note that the formation transaction wherein the REIT acquires all the portfolio SPVs has been completed only on 12th May 2023. Accordingly, the statutory consolidated financial statements have been prepared from 13th May 2023 to 30th June 2023. This is an important one. Secondly, I want to reiterate a point that we had already covered in the annual meet held on 27th July 2023 pertaining to quarter one FY24 distributions. Our first distribution shall be made post Q2 FY24 and will cover the entire period from the date of listing, which is 19th May 23 to 30th September 2023. Further, as of 30th June 23, we have generated adequate cash to effect this distribution, and going ahead, we will endeavor to distribute on a quarterly basis. And the last point before I close, we have continued our consumption growth momentum right through the month of July, despite heavy rains across the country. I thank you all for your continued support and belief in our path of growth and value creation. With this, let's now move on to the Q&A. Prateek, over to you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Adidev Chattopadhyay from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. So you alluded in your opening remarks to a 10% increase in footfalls, which implying an 8% increase in the average spend per visitor. So could you also help us understand among the categories, which categories would have outperformed and what would be the laggards in terms of percentage terms, if you can share on the consumption growth number? That is the first question.
Okay. Sure. I think that's a good question. In terms of our top performing categories, jewelry grew at 28%. Electronics grew at 32%, beauty and personal care at 19%, and footwear and athleisure at 16%. The categories that did not do so well is, first of all, the hypermarkets, because as you know, over a period of time, I think a lot of grocery shopping has actually moved online, etc. So that's one category that did not do too well. Apart from that, most of the other categories have actually done well. And the ones that I spoke about, the top five, have all done higher than the average of 18-odd%.
Okay, so it could be shared number for multiplexes and overall for that, because I think that would see a bump up in this quarter compared to the last one. So
yeah.
It could give
throws. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think in cinema, the recovery was more than 100%, especially towards June, where you know we had some good releases. I think what's more important is that going ahead into July, because of the number of titles that we saw both international as well as domestic, I think cinemas have come back very, very strongly in the last 7 to 8 weeks. And we see this trend continuing into August as well.
Sure. So second question,
okay,
yeah,
you.
Is on... Hello? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. The second question is on NOI margin. Obviously, we have seen quite a bit of improvement from the 23 numbers in the first quarter. So when do you think we are likely to like cross a 75% plus NOI margin at a portfolio level during the year?
So I won't speculate on that. All that I can tell you is that we now have an NOI margin at the end of the quarter at 74%, which is up 360 basis points. And this is actually ahead of the projections that we had done earlier. So I don't know, maybe about 75, but we're very close to that number.
Okay. Sure, sir. Yeah, thank you. I'll come back in the queue if I have more questions. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Tayal from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you and congratulations. And for my first question, I just wanted to sort of understand better this number of 18% consumption growth. Could you give us some context? Where does this lie versus the prior two or three quarters? And how would you generally think about what sort of could be a sustainable number or a trend over the next few quarters on this metric?
Sure, Kunal. I think that's a very good question. First of all, I think two or three things that I want to point out. One is that I think we all will make FY23 four quarters as a base and as a reflection of what the growth was. FY23 was the first year, first four quarters post COVID, and the growth across categories was significantly higher than it had been in the last 2 years. As far as this quarter is concerned, that 18% is like for like. So I just want to clarify it. It's like for like. So we have taken all the malls that existed earlier as well, maybe with us, may not be with us, but we've taken that entire base of Q1 last year and we've taken Q1 this year. So it's a like for like comparison. I think that's important for you to understand. So it's an 18% like for like comparison. Where do we see this going? I think if you look at over, I'm sure there are enough research reports which do indicate that the market growth, perhaps consumption growth, is perhaps between 8 and 10-odd%. And that is the trend that's, I think, likely to continue. Our endeavor obviously would be to do better than the market and meet the projections that we had set for ourselves in the FOD.
Got that. Thank you. My second question is on the inorganic pipeline. I mean, I heard you say in the opening comments that you're evaluating a few, but just want to check if we could consider something as imminent for FY24. Seem to recall a media interview where you said that the pipeline is quite active at this point in time.
Yes. So I think I will repeat that. The pipeline is active. We are in touch and in talks with, few developers. And at an appropriate stage, we will let you know.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you, Kunal.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Agrawal from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mohit.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks and congratulations on your listing and for reporting strong consumption growth. So my first question is actually in continuation of the earlier question on consumption. So now that you're saying that, consumption growth against 8 to 10% industry growth, you'll be outperforming. How should we look at rental growth going forward as well? So should we do we think that you could maintain, you know, at an 18% consumption growth? Could you see that kind of a rental growth as well? And the second part to that question will be that, you know, in your DRHP, your rent to sales ratio was 11.8%. You know, your only listed peer is tracking numbers which are higher than that. So how do you see that moving, and what was that number this quarter?
Okay. May I request Nirzar to take that on? Nirzar, incidentally, is head of leasing for Nexus Select.
In terms of rental growth, you know, our portfolio is, you know, now at 94% in terms of lease up. We've seen strong re-leasing spreads at 21% in terms of activity that we've done. Our rental growth is in line with our past performance. And I think in the FOD, we had conservatively projected about 7.5% CAGR, and we are likely to exceed that.
And to your question about competitively, how do we compare? I think do remember a couple of things. One is that our model is an acquisition model, right? So we do acquisitions, and as part of the acquisition, we also inherit a certain rent to sales ratio, as you will appreciate. And as we go forward, and I gave you the example of a few assets where that has moved up significantly, I think it takes a little bit of time for it to come back. Please remember, the last acquisition of 8 malls was done only in March of 21. So that's going to take a little bit of time. So that's really our perspective in terms of saying what is affordable, and our endeavor obviously would be to bring rents in line with what is affordable at a tenant level. Yeah.
Sir, on the...
Yeah, Pratik, go ahead.
Sorry, just to add to what Dalip was saying, if you just see there's enough headroom to kind of take rentals up. So as the consumption increases, you obviously rent to sales starts coming down, and that gives you enough headroom to increase rentals and get that mark to market every time the lease comes up for renewal. And when you kind of compare it with the market, there is delta as well there. Of at least 200%.
Yeah, I think just to reiterate, and I'm sure you're aware of this, you know, about 10% of our rentals come up for renewal every year. So that is what you can influence, right? You cannot influence 100% of your tenant rents every year, right? So that's really what is important, that every time we release, and I think Nirzar spoke about this, we're getting consistently now 21% releasing spreads. So over a period of time, I think the point that you made is valid. I think it will come back to a normative level.
Yeah. Okay. So my second question is on the again on the business development bit. So you said that the pipeline is healthy, and in the initial remarks you mentioned that you would be targeting underinvested or undermanaged assets. So any sort of, you know, cap rate or anything that you have in mind, just trying to understand that, you know, what kind of gain can the minority shareholders get? Also, if you can clarify if these acquisitions would be done, all the acquisitions would be done on the Nexus balance sheet directly, or will it be routed through the sponsor?
Okay, let me take it in two parts. I think the first part of the question in terms of what is out there which is undermanaged or, you know, underinvested in. There are about 100 A-grade malls in this country. The top five owners or stroke developers own 40-45 of them. So there are another 50-55 malls which are owned by people who have either one or two malls. And clearly, that is not their core business. And that's really the segment that we look at in terms of saying that is where we can add value, both in terms of upgrading of asset, providing better management, cost effectiveness, and using our size and scale and ability to bring in brands, good quality brands into those assets. So that's the first bit in terms of what is on the table, in a sense, you know, from where we would be hopefully acquiring assets as we go forward. Part two of your question, let me ask Pratik to take that on.
Hey, hi, Mohit. Well, I think on the cap rate piece, I think we wouldn't want to kind of specifically comment on it, but I think we're looking at longer term accretive deal for the trust. That's how we look at it from an NAV and a DPU perspective. I think our acquisition strategy remains very, very kind of focused, where we are kind of buying assets in specific markets, be it our existing markets or state capital, and then focusing on really, really value adding by kind of turning around undermanaged malls with a strong team that we have. And kind of we've done that in the past. We're pretty confident of turning around assets. So that's the lookout. That's the basis of lookout for us.
Yeah, I think we over focus on cap rates, I think, is a little risky, in the sense that, you know, when your model is an acquisition model, you also need to focus on what is it that you can do with it. You know, cap rate is what you buy at, but what's also equally important is that what are you going to do with the asset? Where is the value addition? Can you create value through asset upgrade, through better brands, etc.? And I think that's been our strategy, which is that over a period of 2 to 3 years, and in some cases even earlier, we are able to turn around the assets. And for example, I quoted the South example, where we have significantly increased our leasing occupancies and our operational occupancies, and we're looking at 18% to 20% increase in NOI this year. So that's really our value creation model. Does that answer your question?
Sir, it does. And the last bit is on, you know, whether you'll be acquiring it on your own balance sheet directly or through the sponsor.
Would primarily depend on, I think the way we look at assets is it accretive to the Nexus Select balance sheet? If it is, then we would buy it on that balance sheet. We have, as you know, almost $1 billion worth of ability to add in terms of credit. So we have a war chest which is large enough. So the balance sheet is strong, the war chest is big, and there's no reason why we cannot acquire on the Nexus Select balance sheet. Yeah. Okay.
I think we'll do it on the trust balance sheet, just looking at the headroom that we have here. So it should be the trust balance sheet that we acquire.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sir. That answers my questions.
Thanks.
All the best.
Thanks, Moy. Thank you for your questions. Thank you. Okay.
Thank
next.
You. The next question is from the line of Vivek Ramakrishnan from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm sorry I'm in a noisy area. I hope this comes through. You know, you mentioned the $1 billion headroom that you have. In terms of keeping a strong credit profile and your AAA rating, what would the peak is the first question. Yeah. And the second question is, the earlier question was on the cap rate, and from a market perspective, it becomes very important because that's where people measure it, and I understand where you're coming from. But when you buy, would you say that, you know, investors should look at a 1 to 2 year time frame for turnaround, or would it be longer? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
So let me answer the second question first, Vivek. The answer is that yes, if you look at the South portfolio, I think despite COVID, etc., the turnaround, at least a large part of it, happened in the first 12 to 18 months. And that essentially is the kind of time frame that we look at. Beyond that, let's say in a 2 to 3 year perspective, you would be able to optimize whatever you have acquired and take it to a level where it will then be at par with some of the assets that we have acquired earlier. In terms of LTV, I think let me ask Rajesh to answer this. Rajesh is our CFO.
Yeah, Vic. So if you look at the financials, we have a net debt of around 3,500 crores, which converts to LTV of around 15%. So if you again have a look at other REITs, which are at about 28 to 30%, that's around the thing that we are planning to in terms of our LTV, 28 to 30%. So between a 15 and 28%, we'll have around 3,500 crores of watches, like Mr. Segal mentioned, and the REIT regulations allows you to go up to 49%. So between a 15 and a 49% is that $1 billion that Mr. Segal quoted.
Yeah. So I don't think we would finally go to 49. I think, like Rajesh is saying, I think a fairly stable number would be, high 20s and around 30. Yeah. that's what you should look at. But potentially you could, I'm saying, borrow up to $1 billion.
And Vivek, just to add, because REIT as an instrument, when the developers kind of swap in, the transaction of transferring the assets to the REIT is tax-free for them. So most of the developers that we are interacting are wanting to swap for units. So we have a fair play in terms of choosing whether we want to go the debt mode or we want to swap against units.
Or a combination of both, depending on how the deal gets structured. Yeah, okay. Thanks, Vivek. Thank you for your question.
Thank you very much and wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sri Karthik from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sri. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for the opportunity. If you provide us the mix of your rental between minimum guarantee and performance linked, I mean, I guess the earlier number was close to around 30-odd%. How did that move during the quarter?
Yeah, it's around 12-odd%, because what happens is that as you release a large part of what is your revenue share gets subsumed into your minimum guarantee. So with every renewal that happens, it gets subsumed. So there will be a period where that 13 has now become 12, but will hopefully come back. Is there, you want to add to that?
I think it's in line with, like Mr. Sehgal was saying, I think we've seen, we bumped up rents last year. We did a strong line of releasing activity and we bumped up rentals by 21%. So there's a lag effect for between 12 to 18 months while sales catch up and it adds. But it's stable in that zone.
Understood.
Any other questions, Sri?
Yeah, I have two more. One is in terms of the market rentals and the potential mark-to-market upside. I guess the numbers across peers and yourself seem to be indicating in prime markets, the occupancy numbers are touching 98-97%. What do you see as the rental trends at a market level in the prime markets, of course, the top 4 or 5 places that you are present in? And secondly, if you could speak a bit about the occupancy levels and how do you see that moving in the Bangalore office space? Those two. Thank you.
Bangalore office?
See, I don't think we have much offices in Bangalore. Maybe we have no offices at all in Bangalore. So... in terms of your first question, in terms of rental trends in top markets of our key assets, I think, like you rightly said, we are more than 98-99% in terms of lease up. So, and a bunch of that leasing happened post-COVID. So we are fully leased up. What we are actually trying to do is now differentiate and choose the right brands to bring in, which add more value to the mall. And we hope to continue with the same rental momentum that we've displayed in the past. And further pushing the rents as well as the revenue shares going ahead.
Yeah, I think both are important, Sri. One is, of course, pushing rentals. The other is that at the end of the day, as a shopper, I'm sure you also realize it, people go to a mall to find the right mix of brands. So one of the key things as we go forward is to figure out that in each micro market, in Bangalore, for example, we have 3 malls. All 3 have very different micro markets. And how do we make sure that we have a brand mix which is appropriate and will bring in greater value both to the shopper and to us? Yeah?
Sorry. I got confused a bit. I was referring to the West End office space.
Okay, Pune?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Pune's overall occupancy is 72%. And this is ahead of our projection that we have made for FY24. There is an active pipeline, and we should be able to update you in the next quarter in terms of the progress that we are making.
And just to put it in perspective, the office and hotel business, both put together, is around 9% of our NOI. So it's a very small component of our total business. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All the best. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shri Shivaze from Money Life Advisory Services. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. So my first question is regarding how do you see the supply situation in the key micro markets that we operate in over the next few years?
Okay. So I spoke earlier about these A-grade malls that we, is the segment that we look at. That's about 60-65 million square feet. What gets added to that stock every year, Shirish, is about anywhere between 3.5 to 4 million. If you look at FY24 as well, we have line of sight because anything that's going to open this year is already at a stage where fit-outs have started or, construction has got completed, etc. So our understanding is that on the supply side, it will probably be around 3.5-4 million. On the demand side, clearly, if you look at the larger brands and companies, both international and Indian, we're looking at perhaps a demand side of about 10 to 12 million square feet at a conservative level.
Got it. Thank you so much. Second question is regarding two of our malls. So Nexus Rija and Nexus Shanti Niketan. So here I just wanted to understand that although we own 100% of the asset SPV, we own only part of the economic interest. So just wanted to understand why that was the case here.
Yeah. Rajesh?
So this was a joint development agreement where an X percentage is around 30% belongs to the landowner. Hence, the economic interest that we have is only 70% around and are different for different both the different malls. That's the reason.
Okay, got it.
So I think to answer your question, it was structured in that fashion when we acquired.
Yeah.
Okay, and so do we have a ROFO on these assets?
No, we don't have a ROFO.
Got it.
So these are what you inherit in the sense that these were JVs that were formed at some point in time with the landowner. And like Rajesh said, there's about 30% economic interest of the landowner.
Got it, sir. My last question is regarding one mall. So,
sorry.
Just another point is we control those assets.
Yeah.
Right? So management control is with us. So
for all assets, yeah, the control is with the manager. Yeah.
Got it. Got it. So just my third question is regarding one mall. So Pavilion Mall in Pune. So it is part of the platform, but not of the REIT. So do you see this mall coming into the REIT anytime in the near future?
No, we don't see that because, and it's a technical reason. There is nothing else. I don't think there's a business reason. There is a land parcel on which the mall stands, which has a convention center, a hotel and offices, and all of that is a single land parcel, and there can be no demarcation, and hence that was kept out of. It's a small asset, but it's been kept out of the REIT.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
It's only a technical reason. There's no other reason. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Biplab Debarma from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, Biplab.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. And so I have just one question. Consumption growth of 18% year on year. That we saw. Is the consumption growth ballpark uniform across assets?
No, it does tend to vary across malls. And the reason for that is fairly simple, which is that each micro market behaves a little differently from time to time. So if you look at, let's say, malls like Select, which is a marquee asset, one of the highest performing malls in the country, the growth has been 27% plus, right? And it's a mall which has been there for some time. So on an average, it's 18. There will be some malls in any portfolio which will perform lower than 18 and some which will perform above 18.
So what would be the consumption growth in your set top 5-6 assets? Ballpark.
All the top five have all been in the ballpark of 18 plus. So it's some of the smaller malls where, the growth has been a little less. also depends on the city and so on and so forth. What has been the macroeconomic growth in that state, in that city? So it depends also on that. Where is population growth happening? Where are new people coming in? Where are the settlements? Where are new developers building new apartments, etc.? All that makes a big difference in terms of how a particular market would operate. But just to give you a sense, and I think I alluded to this earlier as well, if you look at our key markets, right, and we took three examples over here. If you take Mumbai and Bangalore, we are 1,000 bits higher than the market in terms of growth, consumption growth. In Pune, we are 400 basis points higher, and in Chennai, we are 200 basis points higher than the market. So the benchmark is both. There is a benchmark which is external, which is how is the market doing, and of course, there is a benchmark that you said, which is our internal benchmark, that look, while the average is 18, some will grow higher, some will grow lower. So it's a combination of both, which is, and our benchmark typically tends to be, you know, we should be ahead of the market growth.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir, and all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ankit Patel from HSBC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ankit.
Yeah, hi. So, I mean, thank you for taking the question, but in terms of our clarity, wanted to understand, you know, the revenue from operations about 525 crores and the consumption amount is about 2,900 crores. You know, we passed through the COVID period where, you know, consumption would have declined significantly. And from our understanding now, you know, we would have a variable upside to, in case this consumption next year jumps by a similar 18% or so. If it was like for like, assuming no revisions would happen, on a percentage basis, could you give us an idea what would be the upside potential simply because of higher consumption on your revenue? And what is that based on? Because you would have a fixed and variable component on the rental, and the variable would give you a kicker.
Yeah. No. Understood. I think that's a fair question. I think the first thing is that please remember this is the comparison of 18% is versus quarter one of FY23, which was a normal quarter. If you remember, February of last year is when COVID, right, you know, came to an end, and March was a normal month. It was also a quarter which had very high growth. So the 18% growth that we're showing here was on the back of a very high growth quarter, which was quarter one last year. That's one. Number two, in terms of saying how much is fixed, how much is variable, roughly 87% is fixed and about 13-odd% is variable, which is the revenue linked upside that we get. So as long as the business is growing at this healthy rate, that component of revenue will continue to grow.
And just to add, I think while we filed the offer document, we had mentioned that, and we had predicted sales to grow at about 8.5%. And I think the sensitivity we had done at that point of time suggested that a 5% movement in your sales gives a 1% movement in your NOI. And consequently, 10% movement gives a 2% delta in your NOI. So that's the sensitivity that we've disclosed in our offer document as well.
So your basic premise saying that as long as you know, consumption is growing, revenue would grow primarily because of the revenue share that we have, the linkage that we have to sales. I think this is absolutely valid. Lizza, you wanted to say something?
Right. The other part.
Go ahead, please, Ankit.
Yeah, the other part of the question, actually, I was trying to link it up with COVID because wanted to understand what happens in a downside scenario in terms of your ability to, so the variable component would probably get hit significantly, but would there be an impact on your fixed, and how, basically, how did you manage that period where, you know, there were completely zero footfalls, significant impact on that? So variable would have got impacted, but how did you go through that time in terms of your fixed part as well?
Okay. I think that's a fair question. Two things. One is that obviously during COVID, malls were shut. Yeah, so it would forget about having a variable component. Obviously, fixed rents also, meaning we would be not very sensible in asking tenants who have no business to be paying, you know, fixed rents. So what we did, obviously, like most other people in the industry, was to give waivers. I think the one big difference that we did in terms of giving or deciding on waivers was to do it on a tenant-to-tenant basis, a store-by-store, account, key account by key account, to understand where the pain point was. So to take an extreme example, multiplexes were the first to be shut and the last to open, and hence required the maximum waiver as a category. And then within multiplexes, there were some which required more and some which required less, and so on and so forth. So we did not have a carte blanche across the board saying, are we giving 50% off or whatever. As a result of this, I think in FY22, we recovered about 74% of our rentals, minimum guarantee. 74% is what we recovered. Yeah. So if that gives you a sense as to what would happen, and I'm saying this is a black swan event, cannot plan for it, but that was the worst case scenario. And because we did it, I think, in a little more, let's say, organized manner and easing pain wherever we could, we were able to recover almost 74% of our rentals, even in a COVID year. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes, just one last thing was, you know, how would you compare it with the behavior of, say, a commercial real estate portfolio where, you know, there are larger corporations, while, you know, there would be work from home possibilities, but some part of the offices would still continue to be utilized, whereas in retail, think it's such an event or anything event that happens in a, in that locality or something can have a significant impact on rentals and footfalls and so how do you compare the commercial portfolio to a retail portfolio?
Yeah, so I've understood your question. I think I'm not going to hazard a comparison. These are two very different markets. And I must confess, I don't know enough for me to be able to comment on the commercial side. I can only comment on the mall and the retail side. I think I've explained to you that in a very bad year, we were able to recover 74%. Number two, starting from 1st of April 23, there have been no waivers in the business at all. And you see the NOI growth that's happening, 18% this year, on a very strong growth last year as well. So I think the key really is that, is there recovery that happens after that event? And like I said, it's a black swan event. Nobody can prepare for it. All that you can do is to make sure that during those difficult days, you're also with your tenants. See, at the end of the day, our relationships are very, very strong. And one of the reasons why I think we do well and have continued to do well this quarter as well is because of a very strong tenant relationships. And I think they also understood, and we also understood, that there was a bit of give and take that had to happen, and that's happened. And all of it is over. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Siddhesh from Tusk Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, Siddhesh.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question and congratulations on the performance. I wanted to know, sorry if this is a repeat question, I joined in a bit late. Just wanted to know how the M&A pipeline is on acquisition of new assets, any sense you can give of what are the kind of assets which are there in the immediate pipeline, what the conversion would be in terms of timelines and size of assets.
Okay, I think, yeah, you missed out. This got discussed a little earlier. Let me just repeat. Number one, in terms of what is on the table, there are about 100 odd A-grade malls, which is really what we look at for acquisition. That's about 60, 65 million square feet. Out of these 100, 45 odd are owned by developers like us operators like us. And then another 50, 55 malls that are owned by people whose core business is not malls, and they may be owning maybe one, maybe two, at best three malls, and that really is our source of acquisition. So in terms of what is available out there, I think it's about 30 odd million square feet, and perhaps about 55 A-grade malls. We don't look at B. That's again a very large number, but typically those are strata sold and not of great interest. In terms of fine-tuning markets, etc., how do we look at acquisition? Let me pass it on to Pratik. Pratik, you want to take that?
Yeah. So, Sitesh, I think the way we look at it and the playbook is this 50-60 grade A assets that are available in the country, right? So our focus remains on our core markets or state capitals. We tend to acquire assets which are number one, number two in the market that they're operating. And at the same time, we want to kind of acquire assets where we are able to value add. We've done that in the past. We've turned around malls. We've got exceptional growth in the assets that we've acquired. So value add is a big theme that we kind of look at when we are acquiring assets. And lastly, I think on a longer term basis, all of these need to make financial sense and therefore accretive, etc. So I think these are the parameters that we use. I mean, we are in conversations with a few players, but we wouldn't be able to take names here.
Okay.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you, Sitesh. Thanks for your question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Daksh Fernandez from Darashaw and Company Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, hi. Very good evening, everyone. Firstly, congratulations on the listing and a good set of Q1 numbers. I have a question on the gross debt. So the gross debt here is 4,441 crore, as given in the presentation, and we have a net debt of 3,500 crore. So that would translate to cash of 940 crore. And it also says that this excludes the restricted cash. So what would that figure be, the encumbered cash here?
Yeah, so we are saying 4,311 is my gross debt. And what we said is the net debt of 3,500, right? So that takes to 811 crores. Out of that 811 crores, we have some restricted debt of around 400 crores. That is how the net debt has been computed.
So I think the build-up is, I've got cash and cash equivalent of about 1,300 crores, and then you obviously adjust the restricted cash of about 370 crores from it, including the distributions. I mean, that we wanted to kind of keep it aside and call that as restricted cash as well. So that gives you 3,500 crores of net debt.
And over this period, would this cash, which is not restricted, be distributed, or we plan to maintain a minimum cash balance at SPV InvIT level, considering the guideline by SEBI, of course? So what would the strategy be around that?
So the strategy is to maintain at least 2 months of working capital cash with us.
Okay. And then distribute the balance.
And the REIT regulations require all that is upstream to the REIT. At least 90% has to be distributed.
But we intend to distribute 100%.
Okay. My last question is, do we have a guidance that we'll be providing for FY24 in our investor presentation? Maybe, I don't think so it's covered here, but in the September presentation?
We've actually kind of given sort of qualitative guidance. If you see our investor deck on page 6, that's a summary thing. We basically are saying we are on track to achieve the FY24 numbers that we had disclosed in the DRHP.
Understood. But on a number in this terms of INR per unit for FY24, will we be shelling out a guidance for this financial year? Like some of the other public REITs in which they do, so on those lines.
So I guess in our case, because this is the first year, we've just given, in a sense, projections, not guidance, projections for FY24. I think that is the basis that you should look at. And as the performance and the results come in every quarter, you can update it accordingly.
Sure. Thank you.
The FOD also has the NDCF guidance, so we can compute that in terms of what that DPU should be.
Okay. All right.
Understood. Thank you. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question from the line of Sitesh from Tusk Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, Sitesh, go ahead with the question, please.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to jump in with one more.
Are we seeing more consumption growth in the tier two cities in our portfolio? We see select cities 27%, but apart from that, largely, yes. Is it more in the tier two?
I think the good thing is that the India consumption growth story exists equally strongly in metros and mini metros. So some of our strongest performing markets are even markets like Bhubaneswar, which, you know, honestly is a state capital, but still not even a mini metro. And then there are markets like Mysuru, there are markets like, you know, Pune, which have done extremely well. So I think the growth has been across, actually. So it's not restricted to metros alone. And I explained to you, even in Mumbai, we are almost 1,000 basis points higher than the market growth. So, yeah, the markets have grown across. Clearly, they couldn't have grown at the same rate as FY23. I think that is very important for everybody to understand. That was a post-COVID period, and hence there would have been a base effect as well, because the base last year was very, very high. But on that base, I think growing 18% like for like, I think is a reasonable set of numbers. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question for today. As there are no further questions, on behalf of Nexus Select Trust, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.